Welcome to Friends of Amandla, The Power Within, a special four-part series that explores the authentic stories and lessons from those closest to me, my personal friends. Over these episodes, we'll dive deep into their journeys, struggles, triumphs, and the wisdom they've gathered along the way. This isn't just about their accomplishments, but about the human experiences that shape us all, the mistakes we learn from, the challenges we overcome, and the incredible power of community. A strong tribe can uplift, inspire, and propel us forward, reminding us that every life holds a lesson. And sometimes, the greatest lessons come from the people we know and trust. Welcome to another session of Amandla, the podcast with myself, Mpeo Nkosi. This is another installment of Friends of Amandla, where I have brought in my own tribe just to kind of share with you the people in my life that impact me and have made me go on this journey. And so you can get a sense of why it is that I ask the questions that I do, why I'm influenced in the way that I am, because I feel like tribes are so important. So today, I want you to meet my friend, Lebongo Tsenyane. There were a couple of things that struck me about her when I first met her. It was how down to earth she is, funny, charming, but also a beauty that shines through absolutely on the outside. She has this gorgeous face with eyes that dance and a laugh that makes me so happy. She draws people to her. She is the glue that brings people together. And so it isn't surprising that she's the CEO of Lucky Number 8 Events, which has been in business very successfully for 15 years. 15 years.
Oh, I feel old.
I know. Her clients love her, but I know why, because to know her is to love her. She's romantic. She's thoughtful. She's kind. She's driven. She's a great storyteller. She's a lover of making memories and really forces us to make memories. She makes sure that they are being made. She's courageous. She takes chances on herself and on others, and her bravery has taught me a lot about being afraid but doing it anyway. I am so lucky not to just call her a friend, but a soul that I love so much, and someone who also makes sure that I know that I am loved. Yeah. So it's such a great gift to me. Please meet the Queen Bee, Lebongo Tsenyane.
What a great intro. You were hired as my PR. Thanks.
Thank you. How are you, my friend?
I'm so good.
How are you today?
I feel great. Yeah. I've been looking forward to this. Yes. Nervous, but I'm excited.
I love it. I love it. I think one of the things that inspire me so much about you is your courage. I don't necessarily feel like you see it as courage all the time.
No.
But I'm sure sometimes connecting the dots backwards, you can sometimes be like, shit, that was brave.
Absolutely.
That was brave. That was gutsy. And, you know, the big question that I've always had in my mind is kind of like the 10-year-old Lebu who was in Kuma there in Klagsdorp. Could she have imagined, could she have thought that she'd have such a objectively charmed life, like a business that's been around for 15 years, a growing beautiful daughter, travels. If I think about all the events that you've done, like, you know, working with President Obama, Oprah Winfrey, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, okay. Like, whoa. I know, like, because
when
I get to
benefit.
When you
say it back to me, it sounds so fancy.
It is fancy. You've just got this, you're engaging. Yes, it's your work, but yeah. The people that you get to be around, get inspired by, people you get to produce. Like, yeah, Obama, but I need you to move two steps to the left, babes. Like, I feel like that's also part of it being charmed, is that you actually get to boss around really important people.
I think, and the reason, you know, you get to do those things, you have to be a certain personality. Of course, I'm excited to meet Obama. Of course, I'm excited when I meet Oprah. But I think for me, I've always been great at the distance, like the boundary of, like, when I leave here, he's never going to think about me. Not once, not, you know what I mean? It's like, this is a moment in time when we're working and I get to engage with this person. But people want it to be like, you know, maybe after this, or
no,
you know, I can reach
out. You're just
out,
like, it's just a human being and we're at work.
Yeah, yeah. And also they're going to move on to another producer. They're going to move on to another event. And that's the end of that. And that was your moment. And take it for what it is. And don't try to be like, yeah, when people talk about him, like, I have a contact, I could reach out to these people. No,
no,
you can't reach out to these people. They're not your people. Like, it happened.
They were your people for a moment.
Exactly. No, exactly. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Mm. And I hear that. And so do you think your 10-year-old self would have imagined this life?
Not a chance. I mean, 10-year-old me was extremely happy. You know, I think the thing about that, though, like, as much as I couldn't have imagined this Joburg life or this business or, you know, the people around me, it was a very happy upbringing, you know. Because also when you don't know anything outside of your Kuma township and your...
There's no frame of reference.
Exactly. Mm. And, like, your brothers and your cousins, and we grew up all together. It's like my mother's sister lived with us and all my cousins lived with us. So there were 10 of us in the house. I mean, can you imagine the vibe?
Yo.
So it was just happy. You know, my school was down the road. When you've never been dropped off at school or picked up because it's all around, you know. So you can't imagine this life where you're doing school runs. It's just so foreign. But I just remember a really happy 10-year-old.
Mm. And I mean, like, what I love is knowing your story is, I'm sure people can hear you speaking now, and there are people who are just like, oh, there's some people who've been set up for this life because, you know, they went to whatever schools from the beginning of time. And I mean, like, obviously in the context of our country, we all know that if you are a certain age, you are probably the first black child in your Model C school or whatever it may be. But I love the fact that knowing that you and my husband actually only learned how to speak English in your preteens, like 11.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That for me is like the first, it's thrust on you, but it's the first like thing of like courage on some, at a whole 11.
Yeah.
I must go and break this English in front of other people.
Other people who've been doing it, who've been speaking it for many years. And when you don't have a choice, because, I mean, I remember having a meeting, my parents brought us all in, because it was like during that time when there were hippos in the townships, and the one day there was tear gas, and my parents were like, enough. And we were literally all split up, and they were like, you are, my eldest brother was sent to Cape Town, and my sister was sent to Rustenburg, and then I was being sent to Mafikeng, you know, to go to Mabato High. And that's where, you know, I wrote this aptitude test. I got in. And then the next year, I had literally my English teacher was from the UK. It was like, are you kidding
me? In a little Hong Hong for the real.
In a little Hong Hong, babes. I had no idea what the woman was saying. It was just like, what do you even mean? Like, is this English? And, you know, when you come from being top of your class, like, number one, you know, because you were rated back then, like, pass, but number one or number two. So I was either number one or number two, because my friend Mikey was always giving me a hard time. And now suddenly you are like, term one, fail. And your mother's like, yeah, Uhlansi Waki, new fancy school.
Give my butt. And you're like, no, babes, I can't hear.
I don't know.
I can't be
this lady. I don't know what she's saying to me. I don't know what is happening. And now you're like, you know, back then it's like, you in biology, but I can explain to you guys to one. And now you're like, biology is in English, geography is in English, maths is in English. Do the thing. If you don't know the English, nothing else makes sense. Mm. So, of course I failed. I failed a year. And my parents were...
Devastated.
Like, you are going to repeat a year. What are we going to tell people?
Mm.
You know, we took you out here to give you a better life, and now you are here embarrassing us, failing. You know what I mean? It's like, what is happening? And I was gutted, you know? But I was doing my best, and I was just like, it's complicated.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm like, that's super courageous. And then I know that you also did a exchange, and was that like around in high school as well?
Yeah.
An exchange program to the States.
Yes.
Okay.
But what I do remember about my first year standard five in high school is standing there, and the exchange student from the year before comes to assembly in January and like
reports back.
They've just come back and they're like, and they, I remember this guy James standing, and he had this blazer with all the badges and the patches from all the places he had seen, and I just remember looking at him and going, that's gonna be me.
I want that.
Like in that moment, I just knew. I was like, I don't know what that means, but I know that's what I want. You know. So yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's those moments where I've always had a thing where I can look at something and go, I want that for myself. And then some things have just happened to me. Like having a business has happened to me. You know, I grew up with parents who own their own businesses. They work for themselves. You know, the usual, you know, butchery and shop in the township. That's what put us all through school and everything. But I never imagined having a business. I was like, wanted to work for an agency, and I did. And that's the life I wanted. I never thought I'd ever have my own business now.
What was that decision? What was the moment that said, okay, actually, I'm going to go out on my own?
I was unhappy. I was unhappy in my job. I'd been in it for about 8 years. And I was 35. And I wanted to have a baby. And I was not with anyone. And I was like, okay, I need to change my life. And the only way I'm going to do this is to make a big change. Like, if I'm going to do this thing, let's change the whole thing. So I quit my job. And I was like, I'm going to look for another one. It wasn't like quit my job to go
start a business.
I quit my job so I could get another job, so I could earn more money, so I could afford a baby, you know. And then in the first, like literally the first month, I quit and I ended in December. And in January, a client phoned to brief in a job and was told I didn't work there anymore. And then she phoned me and said, I have a brief. And I was like, I don't work there. And she's like, I'm not going to brief them.
I want you.
I can brief you or I can move on. So I remember phoning my ex-boss and going, this has happened, whatever. And I left her this long message because she wouldn't take my calls. And I took the job. I mean, we can look at it anywhere that, you know. But I took the job, and that was the beginning of Lucky Number 8. I, like,
that
when I
wild.
Left the job, they took my laptop, they took the car. My dad's like, okay, I'm sending your car. And Dumira Banya, my cousin, sent me this tiny little laptop. And I produced my first event for YFM on the tiniest little laptop. And it was the opening of their offices actually in Hyde Park. That was that's what I did. And I thought I was still like freelance while I looked for a job. And then they didn't stop briefing me because it was 2010.
it was a busy time.
Busy, you know. So also I was like, okay,
I can do this.
Look at all this money coming in, which was also very misleading because it was 2010. So there was an event literally every 5 seconds. And I was like, I should have started this business thing a while ago. So, you know, I had an amazing 2010, and then 2011 came and was like, oh no.
Back to normal
babes. You're going to have to find those briefs somewhere.
Yes. When we were basically feeling like those guest houses all over the show, go Mafike, go Tlaxdorp, go Bloom, go everywhere. Everybody opened a guest house, and then it's like, Dololo.
Dololo. And that's how I felt.
Who is coming to Pongola?
No, no one is trying to do that.
Babes.
Yeah. So it was very humbling, I think, for me and a lot of people after that 2010 high and like, all these amazing moments, and then it was just like quiet and wow.
And hiring your first couple of staff, how scary was that? Or did that just come naturally? Because I think when I think about, I mean, I've got my consulting business, but it's me. You know what I mean? And when I look at, I think one of the things that scares me about a business is eventually getting to the place where you have to hire people and other people's livelihood depends on you.
Absolutely.
What is that like?
I love it in that people work without worrying about, you know, what's next. So then you've got happier staff because they feel content. They don't have to be like, okay, are we going to get a brief or are we not going to get a brief? So it feels like a collective responsibility for everyone to work hard so we can get the money so everyone's got their salaries. And I mean, it's obviously taken time to get to the point where you've got permanent staff. For the first couple of years, I mean, I remember that first job, Ezra was on site with me and she was here like cleaning with me, you know, like my tribe just showed up. It's like, what do you need us to do? And I think maybe after a year, I bought a car and I walked into Nissan and I was like, I need a car that can fit a trestle table. And the guy looked at me like, I have never heard such a request.
But at least your brief was clear. Look at you knowing how to brief.
I couldn't afford like these delivery costs also. Like everyone was like, oh, we'll do this. And then delivery cost is 1,500. I'm like, that's coming off my fee. So if my car can fit
four trestle tables
and pack some flowers in the back, then I make that profit. And literally, that's what I was doing. I was delivering, picking up, doing the thing myself for a long time. So I think by the time I was ready for a team, you know, it was a very considered thing. It wasn't just like, I want to look big. And to be fair, you know, I looked at other people that started their businesses after me and they had offices, they had staff. And I was like, what are they doing?
How?
How are they doing it?
Mm.
I feel like I work harder. Mm. I've been in here longer. And one of the things I learned in those moments, and I've kept it, is stay in your lane. Mm. And I taught myself to keep my head down and not look what other people are doing. And the minute I really honestly channel that, I've just been a happier business person. Like, what are we doing? Of course, you want to see like what the industry is doing for inspiration, but I never compare us and what we are doing with this agency. Why did they get that job? Mm. I don't do that at all. And, you know, when we sit in a status and they go, oh, do you know that person won the business? I'm like, oh, that's cool. And we keep it moving. And I tell them all the time, like, we keep our heads down and we stay in our lane. That's it.
And we do what we do
and
well.
And we do what we do and we do it well.
And not comparing. But I think that that's such a an important point about just being clear about being good at what you're doing and staying in your lane and working with your team and coming up with your ideas and just doing it really well.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's what sustained the business for 15 years is that people trust you.
Yeah.
The people that work with you know that I can trust you to get this job done and done well.
Exactly.
Right? Your way without trying to do somebody else's way.
No.
Right?
And you wait your turn. You know, like people have won like pitches that I've been involved with and I'm like, oof, you know, it hurts. Or we were not part of the pitch. We were not invited to pitch and that hurts as well.
Mm.
But it's just like, then we've been briefed on things. You know, when the Obama job came, it was like, what are you even saying to me?
Mm.
They were like, we're looking for a new agency and we're going to brief you on this job.
Mm.
And I was like,
but it's like, Obama.
Like me, like the annual lecture with Obama, you know, and you do a job like that and you don't sleep because you just feel like, if I don't get this right, I will be ruined forever.
Yes.
No one's ever going to trust me because everyone's going to know that girl and her team did a sloppy job.
Mm.
And it was a tough job.
Mm.
They'd never done, I mean, the year before they'd done Bill Gates, they're 3,000 people.
Mm.
So not only were they scaling up to 15,000 people the next year, from 3,000, they were doing it with a brand new agency.
Mm.
And I was like, guys, can we think about this? Are we sure we want to do this? And we did it, and it was amazing.
It was phenomenal. I was there. I get memories about it on Facebook all the time. It was phenomenal, honestly.
And it's just one of those things. Remarkable. You know, when they say one day when, you know, your life flashes before your eyes before you go, I just know it's going to be one of those moments for
absolutely.
Me. Like,
and I feel like that's the thing, right? The thing that's so tough about the business that you're in. And when I think about creative agencies in general, I think that, let's say, advertising agencies, which I've worked with a lot, you actually still get a lot of chances. You can screw up that ad. Okay, that ad wasn't so good.
Yeah.
Okay, that one was great. That one was whatever it may be. But in your business, in events and production, it's like you're only as good as the last job.
Because people are there, real-time giving you feedback.
Real-time.
The and queues are long. The toilets are dirty. Like, people are brutal live.
Yes, because you can't be like, no, but Rinse Obama.
Yes,
no,
don't care. Obama.
We don't, you know, people don't care. Whereas, like, I feel like in an advertising, you can still be like, screw up this ad and still go into.
But they did a really great chicken licking ad.
They won Cannes.
Yeah, they won whatever. No, no one cares about that.
No one
in our
cares about that event. Yeah. They're just like, babes, I need a good experience now today.
They're like, oh no, this stage collapsed. Mm. Like, we remember this stage collapsed or, you know, that artist didn't show up.
It's unforgiving.
But it's so unforgiving. And I still go into every job with nerves. The night before, the morning of, I still go into every single job with nerves. Because there's a lot of things we can control. And I always say to people, like what we do, we're magicians. Like the things we have to be doing in the background that people can't see. But there are a lot of things. Like rain comes and
unexpectedly.
Like, and uproots a structure. I mean, we had an event canceled in December in Cape Town. Like where? It was freezing. First week of December. It was freezing. It was raining nonstop in December. I've lived in Cape Town for 5 years. So I could have told you, there's no way it's going to rain.
And
if it rains, it's going to be warm. It was like single digit cold this past December.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's also that thing where like life will life you and you just will be, your head will spin. And you would have just done an amazing event the week before. And then, you know, go into another one and get humbled.
Listen, humbling. Humbling. And life is all about humbling us, right?
Yeah.
And I want to go back to you being 35 and deciding that you wanted to have a baby and you don't have a partner. And I think this is exactly what I was talking about, not only courage, but what you've just said around the fact that I don't compare in my business, my life to anybody else's, my business to anybody else's. But I know that to be true, even in your life, like you make decisions based on what you're looking for at the time.
Yeah.
So now you're 35, right? And I remember this quite well, but you're 35, you decide that you're going to have a baby.
Mm.
How do you decide that I'm going to do it? And as a Black woman in South Africa, I'm going to adopt.
Yeah. It's so weird because, again, it comes back to YFM. So it was the same year. And then in December, they briefed me and they go, we're going to do this Christmas party. And we want to bring like different kids from different homes. There's going to be 450 kids at this Christmas party. I'm like, oh my God. They're like, you have to shop for each one of them. We're going to send you a list, a list of like ages and like sexes, and you need to have like gifts. And I just remember going to China Mall, because I mean, how else do you shop for 400 kids
exactly
on a budget?
Mm.
And we do this amazing event. Like hundreds of kids descend upon us.
450 kids.
There's never seen so many hot dogs and like ice cream trucks in my life. We do this thing, and then I just look at this little human, and she's sucking on this bottle, and I don't know, it was love at first sight. I just knew it. I was like, this is it. And that's obviously not how adoption works. You don't like pick a baby and go, I want you. You know, that's not how it works. And that's how I know we're meant to be together, because I reached out to the home the next day and I was like, I saw this little girl and, you know, I'm really interested in adoption. How does it work? And they were like, you know, we can't help you. You need to go through an adoption agency. And when I met with them, they were like, well, the way it works is you say you want to adopt, and then you give us a spec of the baby. Spec sounds bad, but as in like, I'm looking for like a brand new baby.
And or like an girl, older baby. Or a girl.
You know what I mean? So you can't come here and say, I saw this 2-year-old at the party yesterday. And that's like, there's no way. If there's someone else who's already been vetted and is looking for
a daughter
who's, 15 months, we're going to give that baby, because our job is to get the baby out of the system as quickly as possible. Not to make you happy, you know. And I just fought and I fought. And they had to move her from that home into a government home, because then you can't just adopt from everywhere. So she got moved. And I used to visit her in this home while I was in the process, and other people would be playing with her, and I'd be so upset. Like, why are you smiling at other people? And why are other people visiting her? And it took 9 months, which, you know, I always say to people, it's so funny, like, that you're pregnant for 9 months, and I went through this process for 9 months.
For 9 months.
Because that's the preparation. And it was hard, and I cried, and there were just moments of, this is never going to happen. Like, child welfare wouldn't pick up their phone for 2 weeks, you know, so I wouldn't know what we're doing. And I think it stretches you, because it's like, if they were just handing out children, people would just adopt. You know, you have to be really sure this is what you want. So it is hard. There are so many checkpoints. There's so many things. Your friends have to write letters. They do home visits. There's just a lot that goes into it. You know,
what are some of the, if somebody who's listening to us today is like, this is giving me the courage to even explore adoption, right? Because I think the reason why I kind of raised the you being a Black woman, and of course, you know, when you have a certain mindset, you're like, I don't care. I don't enter rooms. I was speaking to Lebo Mbete, you know, about her being in a male-dominated industry as a Black female. And she's like, the minute that I lost that Black female, like, leave that behind, it actually, I can operate from what is me.
Absolutely.
You know?
And also, she's so brave, that one.
Right? She's so brave. And the thing is, for me, it's like, you did the same thing. It's like, it's a question to ask. Is, were there any, you see this girl, you love her, you're like, I actually want to adopt her, right? The process afterwards, we can talk about just now. But were there any doubts about societal pressure? Like, the stuff that I think Black women probably struggle with are like, oh, it's supposed to happen a certain way. What is my family going to say? You know, what did your mom and dad say at the time when you said, I am adopting?
I think the reason the whole thing worked is because there was permission. Like, not even that my parents were like, whoever you love, we love. There was not 1 ounce of resistance from anyone. So I felt that I could go full throttle.
Amazing.
Because I knew she would be coming into a loving family where she was wanted. Not an aunt with a comment, not nothing.
Amazing.
You know? And I think that's always been my superpower. Like, just coming from a place of love always. Like, just where your parents were like, if you do the thing, we are behind you. You know? And your siblings are like, oh, is this our new niece? Oh, okay, this is what we're doing now. Do you know what I mean? Never like, yeah, but we don't know, you know, maybe her people. None of that. All the things that sometimes put people off from doing what they want because they're like, oh, now I must deal with these cousins or my mother wanted to be married. I never had any of that pressure. So it made my journey, you know, a lot easier. And also once I decided, you know, you have to go for like a kickoff meeting and they bring all the parents who are looking to adopt. And my favorite thing, and I really hope people take this away, if nothing else, as much as it took long and was complicated, to sit in a room and realize there were single white guys, there were old black people, single black, it was all kinds of people, you know? So immediately you feel like, okay, whatever their motivation is at this point to be sitting in this room, great. But there were all sorts of people who were in that room. And also, by the time, remember I spoke earlier about how 2011 was hard on business because now the 2010 bubble had happened and I wasn't doing well, you know. I was freelancing for an agency even at that point because I was like, okay, I'm not getting enough of my own kind of jobs to sustain lucky number eight. I was like, okay, I can freelance. Like, I'm not above that. And realizing they didn't care about how much money I had. They didn't. It's the one thing they didn't care. They wanted to check my state of mind, what my friends had to say about me, if she would have a place to sleep that was clean and safe. They came, they just wanted to see where she was going to sleep. It never felt like, oh my God, it had to be a double story, big, nothing. So that also, maybe people need to realize that it's not like, you know, I need to
be loaded.
No one is looking for 100,000 in the bank. I certainly didn't have it, and they didn't care. You know, they wanted to know I was sure about the process and I would have the support I needed to raise
And you were
her.
Going to love this child.
And that's it. You know,
there are so many people wanting to have kids, waiting to have them later, because it is costly, number one, to raise children. But often I think a lot of people are starting to come to the frame of mind that actually it takes a lot. I think we're in a generation where intentional parenting is a real thing. You're just not just doing it. And a lot of people realize that parenting isn't for everybody. And so people are making that decision later. And I feel like, you know, hearing you speak, I hope it gives people the permission who want to be parents to explore the option of the alternatives that exist for you to be able to do that. And the fact that when you were doing it, you didn't have a partner. It's not like they were like, well, you need to be married, I'll see.
You need
to have, like, there's all these things,
there
all
was
this
none
pressure.
Of that. And I think
know?
People sit who haven't investigated and thought, oh my God, I wonder. No, maybe.
They probably want me to be married. Yeah. They probably want me to have a lot of money.
There was none of that. I didn't have any of those things, but I knew I wanted to be a mom. And yes, Bill and I had a happy ending in that I finally got to adopt her. You know, the timing worked out and the vetting happened in time. But people need to realize that's not how it works. It was just my happy, lucky, special story. But, you know,
It was a God moment.
It was a God moment. You know, and I often tell her, I'm like, you know, this was meant to be. The two of us, we were meant to be.
No, please. You know how it is. It's like, you know, when you see people where you feel like, oh my goodness, they love or they whatever, and they start looking the same.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same. It's like, you know, when we see you and Bilu, your mother and daughter, like Lady Latswana, you know what I mean? You would look the same.
My mother and Bilu
look
like
the same.
It's crazy.
Insane.
Everyone always goes, what do you mean there's no, like, she's adopted? But also what's been great is we've never led with that. So she's always known. So one of the things, you know, they take you through is tell them, you know, tell her she's adopted. So she knows. But she's, you know, as much as she's known and speak about it openly, it's not our story all the time. You know, so like if there's an essay at school, she's not like, hi,
I'm Bilu and I'm adopted. No, it's like you're going to find out maybe when we're in conversation. And I think that it comes back to what you're saying about the gift that God has given you in your life is that you're surrounded by so much love. That actually what what you lead with in your life as a human being, but in because of that, what is led for Pelo, for your family, for your friends, is like, it's love first.
Yeah.
It's like, we love Pelo. Pelo's our daughter. Yes. You know what I mean?
I mean, gosh, her second birthday, my dad slaughtered a cow. I was like, okay, I think we're doing a lot, you know. And she was like, no, you know, back when I must know. Mm. And it's once at a time. And just, he was so excited. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And I mean, what more could you want?
What more could you want?
Like a grandfather who's so proud of his new little girl. And mm. for me, that was it. And she felt loved, and I felt like she was loved, and the rest is history, really.
The rest is,
you know, and history. Once in a while you walk into the doctor and it's like, you know, family history, you know, when I mm. take it to the doctor and I'm like, I don't know, you know, it's mm. those moments where you're like, mm. oh, but it is what it is. It you know is what I mean? It is what it is. I don't know the family mm. history. Mm. And mm. also then she looks at me and says, Mom, do you think I'm going to be very tall? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, I don't know. Because
I don't know.
I don't know.
Mm. That's so,
yeah.
And I mean, like, you know, there is, it's those small things. And I think there is that component that people need to be aware of. And I think maybe that is also the gift. Like, it's like, now that I'm talking to you, I'm like, your world, the, how can I say, the characteristics, the character that you need to raise this child, mm. God has given you other things in your life to prepare you,
mm.
you know, working in events and production and knowing that there's so much that is out of control and yeah. your job is just to arrive, meet the moment
mm.
with courage, let's move, okay, how can we course correct, etc.
Absolutely.
Is that thing of being able to then walk into a doctor's room and when they say family history, like, I don't know, for the first time, yes. when you're walking in the first time yeah. and you're like, I don't know.
And they look at you like, okay.
Yeah. And I think like that's really wild. Mm-hmm. And I do love, I mean, like, you know, you host our annual spring lunch every yeah. single year. You're like our host. Like I said in the intro, you help us make memories, mm-hmm. right? And it's such a beautiful thing because I know how many memories you do. You're the girl who does the birthday parties. you're there by Halloween. You are just
girls trips,
you know. So you're this person who's just really made so many memories for your family, for your friends, for the children in all of our families. And it's such a gift that you've given to all of us, you know. One of the hardest things when you're talking about your dad slaughtering for Pelo, you know, was losing Papa Levi, yeah. you know, losing your dad. And it's been 5 years now?
It's 5 years, 2 weeks ago.
5 years, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I lost my dad 10 years ago and doing Musebetsi for that 10-year mark last year, yeah. it can feel like just...
crazy.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
It is so crazy how grief can just really, I mean, like, I was even watching some documentary about some family yesterday who'd lost their child like 30 years ago. And when you look at the
child is worse.
I mean,
I always feel like then, the reverse is
look,
worse.
I also yeah. agree. I feel like in life, the one thing that I always pray for is we never want to lose our mm. parents, but they're not immortal.
Mm.
But I always pray for the natural order of things.
Yeah.
I really pray that none of us have to ever bury a child.
Yeah.
You know, but burying a parent is really, really difficult.
Especially during COVID, when you don't have your tribe.
And you don't have your tribe.
You know, it's all the things you never thought would happen. And, you know, as much as it was so, it was just hell. But also the gift of having gone home for COVID.
Yes.
You know, so it feels like I got the gift because mm. I went home with Pelo and, mm. you know, we stayed with my mm. mom and dad and...
You got the condensed amount of time you yeah, needed. Yeah. yeah.
You know, so... And I mean, I've always been that kind of person. Like, I'm the get in the car, click stop is an hour and a half away. Mm. So I was always home. You know, mm. I'm just that person. But to sit like for weeks on end and cook 3 meals a day...
Mm.
And help him with his compression socks. Of course, I was tired because, like you, when you are at your own house, you have a helper and you can go,
yes.
Sisle, please, can you pour me this? And now you mm. are the one,
mm.
you know, frying the eggs in the morning, coming up with something for lunch and supper. And But the conversations, you know, and the every day and the Saturday night ritual when he wants his little whiskey. And, you know, by the time he passed, nothing was unsaid. Like everything
and
we
you
had
got
to
say. Serve him.
Exactly, right? Mm. So it was, and it was just, oh my God, it's wow, to even think about it.
It's insane. It's insane.
But I felt like I had a gift to spend that time with him. You know, I made him write all these things. I'd been begging him to write, you need to write a book, because my dad was funny also. He had all these stories. So now I have this book and I can read it. Amazing. And I can, you know, things I didn't know, random things, you know, and me and my siblings have this book and, you know, we can share it amongst us with the kids and just we have something to hold on to.
And I actually feel like that's such an important thing for people to know is that, and I feel like when you haven't lost a parent, I feel like you, how finite time is.
Yeah.
It hits you so hard once you have lost somebody that close, right? Because maybe it's not necessarily your parent, but maybe it might be the uncle that you're closest to or whatever it may be. And actually getting them to write down things because of the fact that we didn't have, you know, we are analog girls in a digital world. Nerisnadi phone camera. Nerisnadi, there's so many things that are inside their heads.
Yeah.
And if you do have, sometimes you've got an introverted person, like my mom's is a little bit introverted. So
my
she's not
too.
Like, she's not the person who's here storytelling around the, she has her days. We were like, oh, say more.
Okay.
Oh, Batungwena coming out of your shell. But generally she's an introverted person, you know, and we did give her, you know, my sister's arranged for her to get a book last year that she can write
in.
I
love that.
Haven't seen what she's written in there.
Is she writing?
She's writing.
Okay.
She's writing. My sisters say she's writing, the ones that stay with her and see her more often. Like, she's writing. She's writing. Which is really important because I feel like it's a gift.
What a gift.
It lasts forever because there aren't enough photographs. Mm. There aren't enough books. There aren't enough. All of the ways in which we are now capturing time did not exist for us.
On a daily.
Yeah. You know, there's very few people from the time that we started having smartphones to now that I wouldn't have some kind of documented memories of them.
Yeah.
Right? Or videos where maybe they're speaking and I can remember the story. But with our parents, there's almost like a responsibility for you to find a way for them to actually archive some of their memories so that you have them. Because, yeah, it's like once they're gone, they're gone. We hear them in the music. We feel them around us. We have these horrible birthdays and whatever it may be, but they're gone.
They're gone. It's, and I think, you know, it felt like, you know, you just feel like, okay, what more could happen? Because it was COVID. So, of course, events. There were no events. So now you're basically losing your business. I mean, you have nothing.
Mm.
And now your father's passed. Mm. And I promise you, I think it was not even 3 weeks after my father passed, my mom stopped walking.
Mm.
She just stopped walking.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, this can't be a thing.
This can't be a thing.
I remember calling my siblings because I was still at home and like, this lady's not walking, guys. Mm. Like, they're like, what do you mean she's not walking? I'm like, she's not walking.
Mm.
I can't, like, she can't stand up and take two steps forward.
Mm.
And now I'm this girl at this camp looking for a wheelchair. You know, you just feel like,
what is this?
What is this?
What is this?
What is this called where I don't know. You know, you just feel so low. But what's interesting is like you feel so low and then life is happening. The sun is shining.
The sun is shining.
People are going out for lunch. And I remember coming back to Joburg and, you know, because of where I live, you know, I walk a lot. Mm. And I take a walk and I see people all over restaurants, like laughing and my dad died.
My dad died.
Guys.
Hello. Megaphone.
Megaphone.
Hello. My dad died. My mom can't walk. My friend's mom or whatever is very sick in the hospital. Okay. Things are falling apart.
How are you this happy and people are on dates and people are eating ice cream at Paul's and you're just like, I need the world to stop and acknowledge
the fact that my dad has passed.
Yeah. It's that. And I think when you lose a parent, you just become such a better friend.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, a mutual friend of ours, you know, I mean, her mom passed on a few months after my my dad.
Yes.
And I remember that morning getting in my car and driving. And everyone's like, it's COVID. You can't be. I said,
I have to
actually,
go.
Actually, that's what I needed. And, you know, I remember the day my dad died. And I remember calling all of you guys. And you guys rocked up at my house. But you couldn't be at the funeral. But I just remembered feeling like all of you in my bedroom, what that meant to me. And I knew.
That's what she needed.
That's what she needed. Because I got it, you know. And it's that, like, when you lose a parent, you just are forever a better friend to friends who will unfortunately have to say goodbye
have
to their parents.
Have to say goodbye to their parents.
Because it's inevitable.
Anything that you have not gone through, if you already know that, you know what, as you need to show up as best as you can, but know that when it happens to you, eventually when you have that experience, you might have to forgive yourself for not having shown up in the way maybe that person needed.
Because you don't know what you don't know.
Because you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
You just don't know what you don't know.
I wanted to phone friends and go, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, people
about
that had
when
lost,
your mom died five
like,
years ago.
I came to the funeral.
And I sent flowers. And
I called you maybe 4 months later. I can't believe I did that.
Yeah,
and
like,
it's true. It's like you don't know what you don't know. And you need to forgive yourself for that. But when you do know, just remember to do that. And that was, I mean, like COVID was hard for us, man. I mean, like we lost 4 parents. Yes.
It was a lot.
And not all because of COVID, but in that period, in that 2 year period, as a group of friends.
It just felt like you were scared
to open. It was one
thing
after the other.
Your phone. Like, the phone rang and you were like, what now?
What now? And I think I remember feeling so angry, distrusting of God in that period. Let's say now 2022, 23. Anybody would sneeze or whatever, and then my mom would be like, no, let's pray. And I'd be like, I don't trust that guy.
Honor
that guy.
That guy,
he knows how to take.
And we can do that. Now you can imagine our mothers. I mean, my mother's always been Mercerapelo. And you know, and then she was like, I don't want to go to church. I was like,
you're like,
because she's just sitting there going, he let all this stuff happen. And he was just in a place of, Kishap, I don't want to go, you know. And to see your mom who's always, you know, when you're small, you're like, you are going to church, whether we're battler or not, we are all going to church and we are all going to pray. And for her to go, I think I'm good for a minute, you know.
For a minute, I just need a break. Can you quite get to that guy? Can you be easy right now? Like, I'm a boozy right
now. Exactly. Like, get la phone, but not right now. And it's hard, but you find your way. You know, you find your way. Because how do you live without prayer? How do you live without faith? Because then,
if you can't,
you know,
you can't, because I don't know what you hold on to. Honestly, it's like, you know, I live my life trying to judge very little what decisions people make for their own lives. Yeah, but I think not having faith in whatever faith looks like for you, not having faith is something that I'm like, it must be very difficult to just depend on yourself.
Completely. And
because,
also just gratitude, you know. And I know it always feels like such a thing, like everyone throws around. But, you know, I think maybe a year ago, my partner introduced me to the book, The Magic. And we went through this whole thing around gratitude. And every day we practice the gratitude, that we chose a chapter. And it was such a game changer. And, you know, I think I've gifted all of you guys a book and my team, because it just felt like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, if we're not grateful, what do we have? And it just makes you realize, like, every single day, the fact that I got up and I came here, nothing was sore. My body wasn't sore. My car had petrol. All those things. And it always sounds so cheesy when people say it. But, like, we have so much to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, you drive here and you see... For me, I don't know, you know, we all have our thing. My thing is always like a 70-year-old like mom who's walking to go Ulutheogela. I'm like, you shouldn't be working. But she's working because she probably has like 4 grandchildren that she's now raising. So that always gets me like, oh my God, I'm so grateful that my grandmother didn't have to work. She, you know, my mom took care of her. So when I see that, I'm always just like, oh, we have so much to be grateful for.
Things like gratitude gets you through the hard days.
Yeah.
Gratitude really gets you through the hard days. And I mean, we talk about this a lot because it's like, no one told us about adulting, please.
Oh my word.
Like, if there's one thing that
I feel
like.
That was a secret that was not shared.
Connor. if there's one thing that I'm like, if there is one thing, with all the love and everything that our parents gave us, the one thing I want to hold you guys accountable to. Kore, yeah. You guys didn't tell us about this part.
No.
This part?
It's mothering up and down.
Yes.
It's this mothering up and mothering down. Is like
the hardest.
It's
the sandwich factor.
And you just feel like
pressure on all sides.
Why did no one tell me? Why am I dealing with
aging parents?
Who need you more and more because now you are parenting them.
Yes.
And parenting them.
And I feel like I want us to pause there because it really is. It's not just taking care of them physically, right? Mm. Like you're saying, you know, your mom's in a wheelchair, whatever it may be. I mean, my mom's diabetic. Mm. It's not the physical actually that's hard. Mm-mm. What's hard is the emotional stubbornness.
Yes.
Yo, manganga.
Manganga.
Manganga are the older people. And then you've got teens. Manganga.
It's the all side, direction.
Manganga everywhere.
It's a manganga competition. But it's also like, you know, I look at it and I'm like, Mom, let's pack this thing up. Like, me and my sister in Joburg, you know, the two girls will look after you. Come to Joburg. She says, I never.
What am I going to do in Joburg?
This is my house. This is my house where I brought all of you up. My husband's memories are here. So now, you know, and in the 5 years that my dad's been gone, we've, you know, had to figure it out. So now she like stays Kukuma. Then she's here for a week with me, goes back home for 5 weeks, comes back for a week with my sister. You know, and it's like, okay, this I like.
Mm.
I get to see you guys, but I get to be in my own house.
Mm.
And, you know, we've stopped worrying because then like the first year you're like, oh my God, my God. And it works out. Mm. And I think that's the thing about also the universe, right? Like, it always feels hard. And then you get used to the idea.
And it just works out.
And we are in a good place. You know, she's happy and we miss her, but she comes here. And then after a week, she's like, I want to go to my house. Thank you.
This was nice.
Everyone's good. You know, so it's a great balance.
It is a balance. But it's a hard time. Okay. I must say it is a hard time. I mean, I did do a whole episode on perimenopause with Goli Madlala. But I'm just like, and what is happening to our bodies as well?
We need a conference. You know the men's conference? We need a peri-conference.
Brought to you by Nando's. Wow. Because wow.
The fire of peri. Because you have a sponsor. Peri-peri.
You.
Guys, no.
No.
I asked my mom, I'm like, okay, can you talk to me about menopause? She's like, what menopause? No, I didn't have anything. I'm just like, also, you're not helping. How did you not? I mean, yes, my mom had a stroke at 50. So I'm like, I don't know if maybe it was obviously a very different time for it, 50. I'm 50.
Yes.
So now she's recovering from a stroke. She's in hospital for months. So maybe she remembers that time very differently. You know, you're not here by, oh, my pleasure levels.
Mm.
Or my, I'm just trying to survive. Mm. I'm trying to stay alive. I'm trying to learn how to walk, learn how to speak, learn how to, I mean, she had to do all of that stuff.
Mm. She's not here worried about overwhelming rage levels. And if I'm angry, I'm angry because I had a stroke. Yes. I'm not angry because somebody's, you know, stirred the tea too strong.
Exactly. Because of the anger of looking at someone and going, you are breathing too loud. You are breathing too, why? That perfume that you've loved for months and you're like, I can't.
Did you pour the whole bottle this morning?
King. Also, the bitchiness is on a high level.
Are so bitchy.
I mean, it's a lot. I don't know how guys are surviving all the peri girls.
Hey.
Wah, wah.
No, they rather survive. They rather survive because we love them. And I think that is one thing as well that I feel like has been such a gift. For quite a few of us is having such supportive partners that understand our crazy. And I feel like it's so important to like, just be clear about what you want in partnership.
Yeah.
Because these stages come. Stuff like, is this the person that if you had to lose a parent, this is the person that you want next to you?
Yeah.
You know?
And will they be there?
Right? And when you're going through perimenopause and things are changing in your body, are they going to be supportive?
Yeah.
And when you're crazy and bitchy and you don't even know why you're crazy and bitchy, are they going to be able to hold up a mirror to you? By the way,
or come with a coffee and go, I think. Or just come with a wine and be like, okay, I'll be downstairs.
Yeah. You know? I think the older you get, and I feel like that is one thing that I feel like I want to be able to impart to my children when it's age appropriate about this time of life. And even just, I suppose, as they're starting to pick friends and pick partners and the people that you're going to have around you, the people that you're going to have around you is going to be make or break.
Yeah.
It's going to be make or break, right? Because you didn't get to choose us, right? I hope we love you very much and I hope you love the way that we love you, but you didn't get to choose us.
Yeah.
Everybody else that you bring into your life, you actually get to choose.
Yeah.
So don't feel like you need to settle. Don't feel like... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you get to choose everybody else.
But also, you know, I mean, I don't remember seeing my parents fight. You know, they didn't do that. They were fighting in private. And I don't remember I remember seeing my mom in tears when her mom died. And my dad cried when his brother died. But, literally, I can pinpoint those days when I saw them cry. I can be vulnerable with Bello and just say, I've had
a day
from hell. We've lost the pitch. This happened. This time. And just be like, baby, I just need. And she can see. Like, I'm crying. She can lie. And like, mommy, and give me a hug. So they can see you in your low and highs, which makes it okay for them to realize. Like,
your emotions
are not perfect.
They're not perfect. They're
so
humans.
I feel like we were not prepared because our parents were like, we got this. There was food on the table. We went to school every day. We went to church on Sunday.
You're right.
No one was, and you know, unless you had maybe those parents that were like fighting, was threatening, whatever. But like, generally, parents were like trying to keep it neat for us and pretending like it's all okay. So we were not prepared for a life of ups and downs. You know, parents must be perfect. They are not crying.
They're stoic. And you're right.
I mean, exactly.
Like, I think about that a lot, actually, about the fact that what wasn't modeled for me was vulnerability in that way. You know, my mom raising us on her own, survival mode. It's very few times that you're seeing emotions other than, look, I think the maddening rage. Yeah, perimenopause. Ill yona, we also.
Yeah.
Someone
was throwing a shoe at you.
That one we all saw. That one is fine.
Yeah.
But the general ups and downs of what it feels like to have a bad day at work and then having to come and see, you know, I remember, and my mom only told us this like later. She was like, you know, there was a day when she came back from a full day of work and she walked into the house, and in the lounge were five humans watching the TV. And there were five seats because that's the lounge was three plus two. And there were five seats with five humans. And all of those humans belonged to her.
And she had to make sure they're okay.
And I remember her telling me that story just like, oh my gosh. I just want to go back to work. But I'm like that feeling. I feel like, you know, even as you started having your own kids, I feel like sometimes our parents didn't sit us down and say, okay, I've never talked to you about this because I didn't know whether you were going to have children. I just need you to know that you're going to have hard days at work. And then you're going to have to leave that shit at work and come into the home and be somebody different. Or, you know, or just know that that's going to feel hard, right? I might not have cried about it, but sometimes you might want to come in and be like, oh, I don't want to sit in the car. I'd prefer to come home to you than sit in the car or just go and have a drink, right? And sometimes, like our friend Yolandi's mom, who'd be like, kya atla, to drop a bag. And then I'm going next door to Chomi, kilo no wine, and then I'm going to come, akele better, akele botali, because right now, I need peace. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I don't think there was a lot of understanding of how to handle the ebbs and flows of this stage of life.
You know, I remember my mom had a stock fell. And, you know, it's always so funny when people call me the glue. Like, oh, you brought all the girls together, whatever. My mom was that, you know. And there were all these trips to Sun City or to Devon or to, you know what I mean? And I just remember them packing and... going to Jan Smuts Airport. I mean, the fact that I remember that, because like, oh,
Jan Smuts.
Because my dad had a taxi, there'll be a taxi outside to pick up everybody to drive them to Jan Smuts. So they fly to Durban and have a girls' holiday. And now you realize, like, we need this. They needed it. Maybe they we didn't realize why, but gosh, I mean, we know we love a girls' holiday.
But also, I'm so glad. Can I just say, Hore, you're a gogi. Thank you. Thank you for modeling that for you. Mm. Because, I mean, like, my mom really worked really, really hard. Mm. I mean, like, she's not somebody who is extroverted and had a lot of friends and whatever. So that's not something that was modeled for me per se. But I love that that was modeled for you because I get to benefit from that. I get to benefit from, like, guys, it's been 3 months. How so it's anything? How so you for dinner? How so you for holiday? How are we doing it? What's happening?
And you know, I stay actually, ready.
You stay ready, girl. Mm. And I love the fact that that was modeled for you because I get, and that's the thing that I was just saying about your children choosing well, is there are going to be people in your life where there are things that weren't modeled for you that were modeled for them that you're going to get to benefit from. Mm,
for sure.
You know, it's like I get to benefit from how your parents raised you just by being around you.
Yeah.
You know. Mm. And I love that for me. Let me just say.
I love wish that I'd me. Grown up with three older sisters than three older brothers. Like, I'm always so jealous because, I mean, I always feel like I'm the firstborn, even though I'm like the fourth, but I'm the eldest girl. Mm. And it just changes the dynamic. Yes. Like, you are the eldest, babes. Like, if something goes down, trust.
Trust. Lebo.
Lebo's getting the call. Like, okay. Lebo. So I'm just like, I have three older brothers and they're still alive. What is this? Mm-hmm. What is happening? Mm-hmm. My mother's like, embrace.
Embrace, babes.
Embrace.
Embrace.
That's how it works.
It's your role.
It's your role.
It's your role.
The PM role.
Yo, we don't like that PM role, Mari. Sometimes you just gotta take it on the chin.
I know.
And it's hard work being the elder, regardless of where it is that you sit in the family structure. You'll know when you're the eldest child.
Every time I see that on Instagram, people are like, "Yeah, all the firstborn girls, are you all right?" I'm like, "We're not all right.
We're not all right.
We are at work. We are raising children, and we are dealing with our siblings. It's a lot. We need a break."
As a belief. So that's why the girls' trips are so, so, so valuable. Whew. 50.
50, girl.
Last question. Mm. 50. How did you feel turning 50 this year? New decade. I think it's such a remarkable milestone. Other than that, in the context of your own personal life, your mom had a stroke at 50. Mm. So you know that it can markedly be a different place health-wise, right? But a brand new decade, and one that feels like, you know, like people are like, no, man, you're still young. You're like 50. You're like, yeah, I'm at the cusp.
Yeah, yeah, babe. There's no, I'm at where Oslebu. You can't be like when people say Dimamzo,
you're like, yes, I'm not
oldest. You know, you're like, try to show up cute, but people see right through your cute vibes. They're like, hey, so Dimamzo. I'm like, oh my God, I've been Dimamzo 3 times this week. But you are Dimamzo, babe.
You are.
A cute one, but you are cute Dimamzo. One, right? Like, be okay with that.
Mm. What are some of the things that came up for you turning this decade? Because I know it was like, for me, I feel like the decades are the ones where I actually reflect. Every other birthday in between is actually like, maybe the halfway mark. Like when I turn 45 next year, I'm going to be like, yo, got out. But it's going to be brief.
Yeah.
I do know that I'm quite reflective when a decade turns. Mm. And I feel like that has been where actually a lot of change, and maybe it is because I'm reflective, that change happens in that decade space. Mm. How does 50 feel mentally? Like, what have you been thinking about?
You know, 50, it feels comfortable. Mm. It feels really comfortable. I think in my early 40s, 50 was very scary because my mom had a stroke at 50. Mm. So I was petrified. Mm. And then I was just like, God works in such mysterious ways. Yes. Like, you also can't live your life in fear of something that hasn't happened. You know, he's brought you this far. Mm. And you just have to enjoy the life you have, you know. And I started this year so hopeful and so happy. And even when work is challenging, you just feel like, We do what we do. We do it well. We keep our head down. I'm surrounded by people who love me, people I love. Mm. I have a great life, you know, and I have so much to be grateful for. I have great health. Mm. But I also feel like there's a next in me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I think doing events I feel like it's my gift. You know, sometimes you're like, you were meant to do. I'm that kind of person. When I'm doing an event, I'm aware I know how to pivot. I know how to solve things on the go.
You can see things other people just don't see.
Exactly. Mm. I can walk into a space and know it's not right. Mm. All those things. But it also takes a toll on you. It's a very physical way of working. Mm. You know, you can do 20,000 steps a day, especially if you're doing concerts and you are like on site for 3-4 days. I don't want that for myself. Mm. I know that.
Not for the long term.
No, I know there's like 5 years max left in me. Mm. So now I'm thinking about what's my next. And I've been thinking about it for the last 2 years. Mm. It's like, you know, I started off in PR and I went into events and I did a lot of talent management on concerts. Mm. And now I feel like, okay.
Mm, what's next?
What is it? You know what I mean? So I'm very aware of my need for the next and I'm cultivating that. Mm. But yeah, I just feel like I'm excited about, like, Bilu's turning 15 in 2 weeks.
I know.
You know what I mean?
And wow.
I can't. I'm like, what is happening? I want to travel more. Mm. You know, it's my thing. I just love to travel. I'm just like so grateful to see 50 because people don't get to see it. We have seen
when we're losing lots of people that we knew and not close, like not within my tribe, but close enough that I was like, were my parents losing their friends?
Yeah.
Were you guys also, so is this normal or is this abnormal? Mm. Because obviously it feels abnormal to us because like we're so young.
Yeah.
But actually you're like, no, it was probably normal because there's lots of people that die around this time. You know, your body is starting to do strange things and the amount of stress that we're under also, it's a time, right? You know, and actually when I started thinking about people that I knew, whether their uncles had passed or even their dads or whatever it may be, some people are like, no, my dad passed when he was 40 or 37 or 44 or whatever. You're like,
I mean,
it's
young for us now.
It's young for us now.
But I think, but to sum it up, for me, it's like this year, I remember actually literally putting something on my phone. Mm. Like every year I try to pick a word. And this year was brave. You know, it's like, I feel brave. Mm. I want to be brave. I'm not always brave.
But I want to be brave. Yes.
You know, in those moments where I am dealing with my team in a way, I'm like, it's hard because when you run a business, you have to have tough conversations with clients, with your team, with people. It's always hard. Mm. And I'm in coaching, so I'm getting the tools to do those things that don't come naturally for me.
I want to clap for the coaching.
So I feel open. I feel very open and brave and happy.
I love that because I feel like that's kind of how I want to close with everybody hearing all of your stories and me having started with the fact that, you know, I said that the one thing that you have taught me is to be afraid and do it anyway. Even though your word is brave this year, it's actually been something that I believe has carried you for so long. And for really anybody trying to make a brave decision or have a brave conversation or do something different or do something the way it hasn't been done by other people, that there's actually only three things. Mm. It's like, don't panic.
Mm. Yeah.
Be brave and be open.
Be open. But also, you know, just quickly, a girl called me, I think 2 months ago and said, oh, I got your number from Carl in Cape Town. And he said, you've adopted and said you'd be open to a chat. I said, absolutely. Mm. And she's like, I want to adopt, but I don't know how people are going to take it. I said,
girl, what do you want?
Don't surround yourself with people who are going to judge you for wanting something like this. Then they're not the right people.
Then they're not your people.
Then I said, if you're not sure because you don't know if you can afford it, if you're not sure because that's fine. Mm. But because you're worried about being judged by people around you, then, you know. So for me, it's like, also, I've just been so lucky. I have the most incredible tribe. Mm. And I'm sitting across from one.
Yay.
Thank you, Chomi. I'm so proud of you for this podcast. We've been talking about it for so long.
Thank you.
And this is just wonderful. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. This is my friend, Lebo Motsuenyane. I love her so much. And I'm just so grateful for you, my friend. I'm so, so grateful. So thank you so much for joining me.